But I do want to start, board members, by introducing Lieutenant Dwayne Little from the Department of Fish and Wildlife. He is my counterpart at Fish and Wildlife, who is the lead for Fish and Wildlife in our joint pilot project here that we're rolling out. He's got seven folks on his staff that's dedicated to cannabis enforcement, including wildlife biologists and wardens. And Dwayne's background is in environmental science.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell him a little bit about yourself, Dwayne?
I attended Humboldt State University, majored in fisheries. Oh, I'm sorry. Dwayne Little. I feel like I'm in trial. Dwayne Little, I'm a lieutenant supervisor in Shasta County, but I am now the lead for the watershed enforcement team in the Department of Fish and Game. I attend Humboldt State University, and I majored in fisheries biology and water quality biology, and so I have a passion. And in some ways, I'm finding my inner scientist now with this program, so I'm kind of getting back to my roots, and I really appreciate that. Anyway, I've been with the department for approximately 34 years. Should have retired a couple of years ago, but I have some things to accomplish, I feel. And this is probably my last hurrah. I don't anticipate going until they drive me out, but I'm enjoying what I'm doing right now, and I feel like I'm accomplishing something.
So I think when you hear me address the board today, everything I say is about the two agencies working together. We really are joined at the hip on this, and we've worked collaboratively with Fish and Wildlife on many individual cases and specific matters over the years. We have overlapping jurisdiction in many areas. But for this project, the two agencies working together is really critical in the way that we're rolling it out. So this initiative was funded as a pilot project by the legislature this year. It's 11 positions at the Water Board for 1 year. So unless they're reauthorized, they will expire at the end of June. The 11 positions are allocated four here at the North Coast, and so that's four people that are dedicated to cannabis enforcement, and we want them to be focused on that as we move forward. But also, we've been saying to the legislature, we are a fee-funded program, so we cannot put our MPDS people out there in the field to take enforcement over cannabis, and the governor's office and the legislature has been responsive to those messages. So four folks here, four people in the Central Valley Water Board office in Redding, which is a satellite office there. They have a lot of issues on that side of the hill now, and it's an exploding problem there. And then three positions in my office, including my senior prosecutor, who's also recently been reassigned as a liaison to this region, Yvonne West. And then I also have a couple of an engineer and a specialist there. In fact, my whole staff was out here with your staff and Dwayne's staff doing the Sproul Creek inspections that we'll touch on a little bit, and I'm sure you may have some questions about. Dwayne has seven positions at Fish and Wildlife. The pilot project is focused on, and this is how I talk to the media, north of Highway 20 plus a little bit of Sonoma. So essentially, we're not looking in other areas of the state, despite the pleas from Santa Cruz, Big Sur, Fresno, and all the other areas where cannabis cultivation is creating the same types of devastating impacts. We don't have the resources to focus anywhere else. Frankly, we don't really have the resources to even roll out our program in the way we would like to here. So we really need to stay focused and be targeted with our approach so that we're getting the most leverage from the resources that we bring to bear. Our program addresses grows on private lands. As much as the public trespass grows are a severe environmental problem, we really don't have any tools as a civil agency to address those types of problems. So we can play a support role as advisors on remediation or impacts, but the federal agencies are fully capable and have the resources to do that on their own. What we can do is regulate activities on private land where landowners have an interest in preserving the value of their land or where business owners want to operate a business successfully. If it's somebody that just wants to trash the land, it doesn't care about it, and is willing to fly out of country if they're caught, our model is not going to be an effective model. What we found, though, is there aren't a lot of people like that on the in the coastal areas. Most people do care about their land. They care about environmental issues. We're finding that a majority of people are probably going to be likely to be subject to our program. And then a really important thing is to integrate here and break down the silos with the State Board's Division of Water Rights. So we had six inspectors from the division on the Sproul Creek inspections. We had three teams with various with members of each agency and each discipline on each team so that we were really efficiently looking at a property in a global way. There's no way to solve the cannabis issue from a water quality alone perspective. Water supply and unauthorized diversions and appropriate levels of flow are all really critical. We need to work with Fish and Wildlife and the division. And I have the commitment from the division that they will support us in this endeavor, even though they didn't get funding for these positions. Four major components, as you've heard me talk about before, and your staff, development of a regulatory program, that's your thing. I'm not putting my finger in that well very much. I'm only sitting in the back watching you do it, helping you guys do it. So whatever the regulatory program looks like, your staff is working on that with the stakeholders, bringing the various tools to bear. Samantha and Matt have spent a lot of time on that, working with our colleagues. I'm playing a support role and working in the background. Education and outreach, we're all working together in this area. It is a challenge to get information out. Your region has circulated about 1,000 flyers, or we've circulated jointly about 1,000 flyers saying, you know, watch out for, make sure you don't have sediment discharges. Store your fuels appropriately. Don't have undersized stream crossings. No recreational bulldozing. That's a bad term, but I will say that it is all too common of a practice in some of the areas up here. So we're getting out flyers. It's amazing the amount of positive feedback we've had from clone shops, grow product salespersons, and then also the real legitimate and hardworking stakeholder groups, Emerald Growers Coalition and Small Farmers Association of Mendocino. Both of those agencies are working really closely with us to get the word out to the growing community about what we expect from them when we come to their property or whether we come there or not. Multi-agency coordination is critical because all of the various partners that we work with, not just Fish and Wildlife, who is our main partner, but the county officials who have various land use and zoning authority and planning authority, our sheriffs, our district attorneys in these counties, very important that we're able to work with them effectively. And then, of course, enforcement. And you'll hear me talk a little bit about that. We also have a statewide task force at the board. It's Chief Deputy Director Bishop, who is – oh, I should say more, too. Let me stop there. Chief Director Deputy Director Bishop is on the task force, and then the North and Central Coast boards are critical leaders in the project, but also the DWR, the Office of Enforcement, the Division of Water Rights, the Central Coast Board and the Lahontan Board, they both have pretty acute problems, and they're on the periphery. They have no funding to address this, and I've held them at bay, with the exception of a few targeted actions there with local agencies upon request, because we don't have funding to work in those areas, but they're very interested in how we roll out our program. And then the Office of Public Affairs is critical for us. I do two interviews a week on the radio, several newspaper pieces a week on this. Matt and I are always putting the message out of what we expect to see, that we're looking for compliance assistance, that you've got to demonstrate that you have a right to divert water, all the kinds of messages in our programming. And George Castirco at OPA does a fantastic job getting the word out. And then Office of Leg Affairs, Rob Eagle, I've probably had 15 meetings with legislators as part of the budget hearings last year. I've met with Assemblyman Wood 2 days ago. So also we have a lot of support on the legislative end, but both of those require regular care and feeding. The media and the legislature require regular care and feeding, or they lose track of the good work that we're doing, or the messaging gets skewed. So it's really important to stay on top of those things. Development of a regulatory program. Enough said. Education and outreach. Vehicles that we use. So we have information flyers and handouts, like I talked about. We have been handing them out at grower supply stores, clone shops, at all the public meetings that we've attended, the North Coast Watershed Council, we got to address them. So we've been really working hard on getting the message out. We just developed a flyer to mail to grading contractors. We've noticed that there are a lot of grading contractors that are engaged in activities that result in discharges of sediment to waters, including pad grading and stream bend crossings. We actually, in our first major inspection rollout in the Central Valley region, we're naming a grading contractor in a cleanup and abatement order. Since that contract, there was no permit pulled to do the grading. That person is a person that caused the placement of waste where it's likely to be discharged into waters of the U.S., and so that is a liable party under Section 13304. It's not going to be our usual mode of business, but we want grading contractors to understand that they're not completely under the radar screen here, and they have a responsibility not just to their license, but to water quality and to the water boards. It's got a big backhoe on it. It's pretty cool looking, actually. Doing a lot of media outreach, again, as I described, tons of radio and print media. I urge you, if you have the opportunity and time and inclination and tech savvy, to go on the KMUD radio station webpage and pull a few of their recent news broadcasts about our initiative. They have a very balanced perspective. They present Friends of the Eel River is represented, Fish and Wildlife, our perspective is represented, and then some of the stakeholder perspectives are represented. They have some real good work that's done, and this is a message that is right in the heart of the regulated community. It is getting directly to the people that we want our message to get to. And then we've done a lot of stakeholder outreach with Julia Bond from Small Farmers Association, Hezekiah Allen from Emerald Growers, and their members. And Matt and I have actually attended some of their executive meetings and addressed them and actually did a workshop with small farmers. So there are a lot of stakeholders interested in the regulatory path, and we're making it as easy as possible for them to take that route. Part of our message: obtain all necessary permits. This is not just the water board. You may need a land use permit. There are county ordinances that are in effect. You probably need a stream bed alteration agreement if you're diverting from any surface water. There are all kinds of potential permit issues. Our permit, whatever it looks like, whatever it's called, will only govern the discharge of waste from this and maybe other activities. It's only relevant within our scope. There are many other permitting agencies. We want people to know that just getting a permit from the water board is not the only thing that you may need to be a cannabis cultivator. Demonstrate a water right. That's really critical, especially in these drought times, and that's why the division is really joined with us closely. We want to make sure that the water rights are there and that they're not being surcharged or abused, taken advantage of. And a lot of that, we heard a previous speaker talk about forbearance. I mean, that's a solution that we're going to have to, that we're going to hope that responsible parties and landowners in various watersheds are willing to embrace. It is one of the most, probably one of the brightest spots in terms of trying to solve those low flow issues in the summer months. Manage your site safely. I mean, this is the water board's message. Minimize erosion from what you're doing. Apply fertilizers responsibly. Store your fuels and chemicals safely. Engage wherever possible in non-chemical pest control, and manage your human waste and trash. So these are really the critical components of our message. And of course, that gets refined more and more as your program staff develops the waiver that you're working on. Multi-agency coordination. Here's the folks that I've been working with at the state level. The governor's office, of course, this is the governor's proposal, even though it seems like I may be taking ownership of it or the water boards may be taking ownership of it. This really is the governor's proposal. The Cali Attorney General's office supports this proposal and has been working with us and will be our partner as needed. They're in the background for now. Cal EPA has been instrumental in bringing together the Department of Pesticide Regulation, DTSC, and Cal Recycle to help us with components of it. Also, DTSC and Cal Recycle may have some funding to assist us with remediation at orphaned sites. It's limited in some ways. For example, DTSC's orphan money is only available for hazardous substance remediation. But man, if you have that, you need it. And then Cal Recycle has two pots of money, one for trash that is deposited on ranch land, and then another for trash deposited on forest land, so municipal solid waste cleanups. And so we may not be able to fully fund remediation from these pots, but this is one of those situations where we need to use every tool in the box. Cal Fire has recently become, I think, a believer. We addressed the Board of Forestry and got support from the board members, and actually a number of the Cal Fire officials expressed support for the program at a meeting we had over at the Central Valley Board in Reading just last month. Board of Equalization, these are some unusual conversations. Apparently the Board of Equalization has been directed to be ready for legalization in 2016. They want to know how they could play a role for us. These are political questions that are sort of beyond what we're engaged in now, but we are meeting with them to describe what are our program needs, what is the scope of the problem as we see it from an environmental perspective. A lot of caveats in our discussions because we really haven't been able to get our arms around the scope of this problem, I don't think. We're just really starting to break open the surface of the iceberg. And then Department of Water Resources also has a role to play. They have a lot of data on groundwater and other surface water issues. At the agency level, they are at the local agency level. The county boards of supervisors are really critical. I've presented to Humboldt, Siskiyou, Mendocino, and Trinity counties in your area. So I've done public presentations to the boards, and all of them have supported us. Perhaps most surprisingly, Siskiyou County, where the Board of Supervisors wanted to know first question, why are you here? Why is there a state official coming to address us? By the end, they had directed County Council to send a letter to the legislators supporting the pilot project and funding for next year. So they're really on board with it there. All the other counties are very supportive. I'll be meeting with Lake County, I hope, on February 12th. And Sonoma County shortly thereafter. So it's real important to daylight our activities for civic leaders so they have an opportunity to take whatever action they're going to take with full knowledge of what we're doing. County sheriffs, we've met with all the sheriffs in those counties as well. So far, a high level of support, particularly in Humboldt County, where the sheriffs were instrumental in the rollout of the Sproul Creek inspections. Also are taking a very different approach than the historic law enforcement model to rolling this program out. I will say this, that at the Sproul Creek inspections, no plants were eradicated. So for our program to be critical, law enforcement has to agree that there's a pathway to compliance and civil enforcement in this area. And so the Humboldt County Sheriff, the Mendocino County Sheriff, and the Trinity County Sheriffs have all been very supportive to date that we're focused on a pathway towards compliance and a civil program. And obviously there will be criminal actions taken in certain circumstances, but that's not the model that they're going to adhere to on these private land inspections that we want to go with. Same kind of conversations with district attorneys. County Council's office, of course, they're very concerned with appropriate codes and land uses. And so we had a very good We've had very good discussions with fuel storage, and the county council's office usually represents the CUPAs and the hazardous materials folks. And so they are also on board with our approach in those counties. And then county code and code enforcement, and then the ag commissioners. We're starting to bring the ag commissioners into our discussions now. They're a little reluctant, but of course this is something where they have they can help us with this in a very important way, because they have jurisdiction over pesticide application and fertilizer applications. So good partners. Other stakeholders that we've been engaged with: the tribes, construction industry groups, Caltrout, Trout Unlimited, Nature Conservancy, all very supportive. We're in discussions with them. They all want to know how can we help. And I think that there's a very important role for those agencies to play in our discussions. Friends of the Eel River, a lot of engagement with them. And then recently I've been engaging with the rural county representatives of California, and they have some proposals and some thoughts about where they want to go with land use and planning-based regulation. Talk about enforcement. The strategic plan presents a proactive approach. We want to present a proactive approach. So instead of reacting to complaints here and there, we're looking at sub-watersheds and watersheds and trying to go into a watershed and talk with and do inspections with all the property owners there, compliance inspections, and urge them to work with us to develop solutions in that watershed, both with respect to water quality and water supply. So this is kind of a situation where we need a group effort to solve the problem in a sub-watershed, and that may mean that everyone has to pull their sort of weight or pull their fair share of the burden of coming into compliance within that watershed. So we're focusing on high-value watersheds. Sproul Creek, which is our first inspection under the proactive watershed approach here in this region, was the first example of that, and we rolled that out last week. It dried out for the first time in memory this year, preventing the coho migration for spawning into the stream. And there's a lot of sediment loading in that stream, but and that's critical. That's a high-value watershed that needs immediate attention. But it's also an area where we think there's a very high chance of success for our program, because it's all private owners, landowners, who have a high interest in preserving the value of their land there. And so we think, and I think the inspections went very well. The landowners were very cooperative. We go with consent. We try to seek consent to enter the property, but we do have warrants issued by the Humboldt County Superior Court in our pocket if we need to serve them. Most of the property owners allowed us to come on with consent and showed us all of the various important features on their properties. So it was a very successful inspection. We looked at water rights, water quality, all that different, all the different kinds of things that were interested. We want to make sure that many or most of the grows are on private land. If there's some trespass grows in that watershed, we're not going to ignore it. But if it's mainly a public land trespass watershed, it's really got to be a law enforcement case. It's got to be addressed in a different way. There's really nothing we can do there, because we have no real criminal authority. And those kinds of activities, trespass grows, are per se criminal activities. We use a lot of aerial surveillance information. I mean, this is anything from Google Earth, where you can all go and just look and see it, to more sophisticated satellite imagery, to direct flyovers with aircraft. So we're looking to identify areas where we see significant potential for sediment loading from cannabis cultivation in an important stream. And I can't say how closely we work with DFW wildlife biologists and the Fish and Wildlife and Department of Fish and Wildlife. And Duane still calls them Fish and Game, and so do I sometimes. But these folks have been in the field. They know the streams that are impacted. They know the flows that are in those streams. And so we work so closely with them to identify where we should go and then to roll out our project. The wardens have a lot of experience with accessing properties in a safe manner And I think Dwayne was universally praised for his work on the Sproul Creek rollout. Logistically, we inspected 16 properties in 3 days with three teams of inspectors. Man, I can hardly manage three lawyers at a time. So I think it was quite a colossal effort from a logistical standpoint. And there were no incidents. And there wasn't even anything close to an incident. So I think that's a tribute to the potential for success of the program, how invested the stakeholders really are, providing consent, no incidents, and also to the preparation and organization of your staff and the Fish and Wildlife staff as they went into the field. We are not alone. I guess this is kind of the theme, and I've been talking about it quite a bit, but, you know, the county boards, the sheriffs, the DAs, the federal prosecutors that we've spoken with, the state legislators, everyone's invested in the success of this project, and I think that there's a lot of potential. It's very challenging. It's very challenging on several levels because it's been illegal under federal law for so long. It's just been under the radar screen, so it's an extremely challenging project. County land use regulations are at issue. County cannabis regulations are at issue. The district attorneys have enforcement discretion. There was a ballot initiative, I believe it was, in Shasta County this last term, and they banned all outdoor growth of cannabis. So essentially, the experience from the North Coast county leadership is that that type of a ban generally pushes the activity further out, away, and out of sight into the more pristine areas of the environment. And I'll say that without the cooperation of the counties that we've had in your district, they could just shut down this operation and we could continue to see the kinds of degradation we're seeing and the proliferation of environmental problems. So county land use regulations and the cannabis regulations in the counties are really important. And so we work very closely with them. Of course, we're going to respect whatever the counties decide in terms of what the types of things that they adopt. Here, I just want to say that with respect to Trinity, Humboldt, Mendocino counties, the Board of Supervisors and all the staff is really in support of this program. And the district attorneys have also said we'll be exercising our prosecutorial discretion where there's distribution to minors, wholesale export out of state, organized crime implications, or implications of other drugs such as methamphetamine. And if you're a cannabis cultivator under 215, it's not likely you're going to be prosecuted by these officials. We have addressed the federal problem as much as we can, which is that cannabis is the most highly regulated of controlled substances under the Controlled Substances Act. But the Department of Justice has issued a guidance memo that says where states have a program in place to effectively regulate cannabis, and they're talking about everything from cultivation to distribution, you should focus your enforcement efforts on trafficking out of state, distribution to minors, and other drugs, and then cartels and organized crime. And so when we've had discussions with the federal prosecutors, they're happy to stay focused on that issue and those issues, and they've essentially given us they've said that they will support our program if we roll it out. So part of our strategy is to cull out or distinguish between those who are suited to regulatory life and life under a permit and compliance with environmental regulations and those who cannot or will not comply, and those folks will be dealt with by law enforcement. This is a quote from the Department of Justice memorandum, and essentially they're looking for states to step into the brink. Their sense is we haven't done that as a state previously. This is our first effort of doing so, and they're very pleased with that. Again, talking about culling, our inspections are designed to cull cultivators who are likely to be capable of enrolling and complying with our permit from those who are not. We do selective inspections to achieve general deterrence. There's no way we can go to every site. So we need to get the message out. All the radio interviewers and the papers, where are you going to go next? That's what they want to know. And my message isn't, I can't tell you, my message is, I'm coming to your house next. So essentially, get your house in order, and then everything is going to be okay. We will focus on compliance assistance. It's those that can't or won't cooperate on the compliance assistance model that we will ratchet up on, consistent with the progressive enforcement approach we talked about earlier. And then, yeah, we can't expect every site. So it's kind of the main points that I wanted to hit. Dwayne, Diana, anything you'd like to add? I do want to say I was so pleased with the Sproul Creek inspection and the way it went, went down. I think there may be some fines and penalties coming out of the inspections. For the most part, not from the water board side. I can speak for the water board side. I think for the most part, we may issue cleanup and abatement orders. We want people to have time to come into compliance. There's going to be a lot of work on the water rights side, but we expect to have the inspection reports completed in the next few weeks and determinations made about how to proceed with enforceable orders. We do want to have enforceable cleanup orders in place for these sites, and that's basically what holds people's feet to the fire in terms of timely coming into compliance. So we're going to skip that first step of asking nicely in a lot of cases and just issue a friendly cleanup and abatement order and hope that people can meet the terms and conditions of it. I mean, in cleanup context, we often work with the dischargers to come up with a feasible schedule for deadlines. And this program is going to be no different than that. Dwayne?
Just that it's been a privilege working with the board, I think as long as we can continue to do this in a safe and efficient way, we'll be very successful. One of my biggest concerns right now is just the lack of manpower. I've got staff, really. I mean, Chris was correct, there are seven people assigned to my team, but there are, that includes myself, an AGPA, and an attorney. So really I have four staff, two scientists, two game wardens. And I'm working on trying to get more staff, but I'm covering everything north of Highway 20 with the five of us, and including these public meetings and so forth, and the educational outreach of it. I'm really kind of taken out of the fold.
I just wanted to express my appreciation to Dwayne and your staff for coordination. It's a key partnership. And we really appreciate Fish and Wildlife in the North Coast region was really the leader in this, bringing attention to the environmental impacts, and now we're working hand in hand with you, and just wanted to give a shout out to Chris for to how effective you are as the key spokesman for the State Water Board and the regional boards in this program. Chris has been a leader and a champion, and I really appreciate all of your efforts.
Board member comments or questions?
Mr. Chair, first I want to thank Chris and everybody that is involved with this Department of Fish and Wildlife. I think there's a couple of things. One of them, we talk about regulatory agencies, and if we were to sit down today and write the Porter Cologne Act rather than when it was written, there would have been a lot of differences. I don't think in 1963 anybody looked at the possibility or the probability of a cannabis grow anywhere in the state of the California. That just, you wouldn't do that. Much of what we have done and are doing requires Dwayne, because he has that thing on his hip that makes a lot of people compliant that aren't. And we don't have that. We don't have any sworn officers within the water boards at all, and I doubt that we ever will. So it's a problem that is in that sense different. It is something that we have gotten. Much of what we are doing, we weren't, in terms of Chris's office, we were not doing 18 months ago. We weren't even thinking about it. So thank you guys for doing this. I have a few questions, which living in the North Coast, and there was a time when, and I think Dwayne will particularly be sensitive to this, there was a time when you could go trout fishing and walk up streams that you just, you didn't even think about it. Now, the first thing I do looking for trout is look for trash that's buried under logs because it's telling me somebody's there that I don't want to run into. That's a loss to the people of the state of California, and I think we absolutely have got to address this. The fact that every agency from the federal government right on through the local sheriff's office agree on this. It's something we need to do. But I do have, just from the perspective of a board member, a couple of questions just so I have a handle, because I think everybody on this board gets asked the question of cannabis just by the public. It's part of the job. We went to Sproul Creek. We looked at 16 properties in 3 days. In that watershed, does anybody have an idea how many properties actually exist there?
I'm guessing.
Okay.
That's a modest guess.
Okay. So are we're guessing something in the neighborhood of 25% to 30% we actually have visited within that watershed. Okay. In the process of doing that, what's the size of most of these properties?
The largest was about 110 acres, the smallest maybe 40.
Okay. Okay. Do we have any idea, and we're making guesstimates, I understand, because in part of a neighborhood that I'm very familiar with, the average size of a grow is between 1 and 2 acres. We're aware that prosecution doesn't happen unless you have volumes of plants or volumes of property. Most of the stuff that I have seen has been pretty small in its application. Do we have any idea of where we go or how we deal with that? I mean, a 1,001-acre plots is just as destructive, maybe more, than 1,000, and certainly a regulated 1,000. Do we have any idea how we're going to deal with that?
Well, I think we are going in with our eyes wide open that we're not going to be able to go to every site, mm-hmm. that we need to selectively, that if we can't attain voluntary compliance through our permit scheme and our use of our enforcement tools to nudge people in the right direction, it won't be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the logistical issues with the sheer scope of the problem can be daunting, and yet we have determined that we're going to take the challenge head on, and that we're going to take a selective approach and try to expand what we can do on sites that we go to sites that we just can't get to.
At the same time, I'm targeting the teams on critical habitat,
mm-hmm.
Because to me, from my perspective,
yeah.
that's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have a fishery that's in dire jeopardy or a stream that's dried up, I'm going to focus there. Now, I hope that in time, you know, like Chris said, that this will spread like wildfire. I mean, that's our hope. But right now, with the limited resources, I'm going to attack those crucial habitats where I'm going to lose a fishery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then I'm going to lose our legacy. And that's my priorities.
As a fisherman, absolutely, I agree. Okay, the idea that you called for things that you could enforce and those that you could not, looking at, because clearly every one of these property owners has a dog in a fight. I mean, if you go to enforcement, they have something to lose out of the deal. Do we have any idea of overall in the state or north of Highway 20, how many grows go on in property that is owned by the grower as opposed to those that are being done by people who are squatting or on private property or working in federal, state, governmentally owned lands, BLM land, whatever. Anybody got a handle on that?
We don't have a clue.
So the best information we have is from the emerald growers and the small farmers about people who actually work on private land. The best estimate they can give us, and I would say, you know, this has a huge margin of error, is approximately 50,000 gardens in the pilot project area. And that doesn't include trespass grows or folks that have a couple plants in their garden. It doesn't include backyard gardeners or trespass grows.
Yeah.
And that's the grows they want to report to us. There's a lot of satellite grows associated with that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's phenomenal how many are out there. If you ever have a chance, take a flight over the Mad River.
That's the other thing that I do is fly airplanes besides go fishing, and it's just amazing. September's a time to go look.
Board member,
I wanted to, well, thank you for a very thorough overview. I guess my head is swimming and, you know, reacting to everything from, well, of course they're supportive of the program because we're driving the bus towards legitimizing their activities and legalization, to the flip side of that, thinking, great, we're condemning an entire generation to have a slow death through emphysema. I mean, it's just a whole bunch of reactions that I get with this particular topic. I am pleased to know that you pulled in Department of Pesticide Regulation. I do believe that there is a legitimate use for medicinal marijuana. I do believe that people who legitimately use it or need it are dealing with impaired immune systems, and I am concerned about various economic poisons that might be used illegally on these products, this commodity that is intended to be inhaled or ingested. So I'm glad you brought them in. But we are, it is my opinion, we are driving the bus towards ending prohibition. And I think that's why you're seeing so much support from people who, obviously, for financial gain, want to see prohibition ending. I have real mixed feelings on this. I have a visceral reaction. I went steelhead fishing on Sunday and on the Russian River in Hopland, and I came across an abandoned grow. And I do have a visceral reaction to that. And I'm not objective on this subject for lots of reasons. And quite frankly, as a forester, I'm tired of going out in the woods and feeling like I have a target on my back. So, I mean, it's very real for me. But at the same time, I know doing nothing doesn't accomplish or protect the environment or our resources as well. So on one hand, I want to say thank you, be careful. And on the other hand, I'm still holding my breath to see where all this goes. But I think at least this one small example for a narrow niche of producers, you know, might actually achieve some good in the long run. But thank you, and I'm going to reserve judgment.
I think, and this is something we hear a lot, and I just want to be clear, and I spend a lot of time kind of ratcheting back from this. We are not driving the bus. We are on the bus that is being driven by the population of this state. Anyone you talk to, they will tell you that the chance of this being legalized in 2016 is extremely high. And that's what the governor and legislature are reacting to when they're saying, well, when that happens, what are we going to do? Yeah. Because when Prop 215 was adopted, we didn't do anything, and that's part of why we got ourselves into this mess. So,
I just want to, first of all, I want to have supported your efforts from day one. And I believe you've progressed tremendously, and I want to make sure that 60,000-foot level is my big comment. And my smaller comment, we have one program that's managed by three people that handles 20,000 grows day in and day out, and it's called the Humboldt County Assessor. And they do aerial to mail to civil lien. And it has worked tremendously well. You don't even hear about it because it works so smooth. Second of all, Arcata, with a about 15,000 to 17,000, invest about $450,000 in regulating the quantity of electricity. And as far as I know, that's gone exceedingly smooth. So I want to keep going back to this aerial mail to sanction, and education is going to be a big one. Probably the key stats you need to keep track of is how much labor time is spent regarding these 16 people and these 16 properties and compare that. I know, like, for the police, for about that number, that's three full-time equivalent police officers because of the court system, and takes about 6 months to prosecute and so on and so forth. So what I'm trying to say is, if it hits very high labor levels, it's a great educational tool. It's a great way to start, and I think you've gotten tremendous press. But I do want to say, you know, you're dealing with a half of 1% or actually far less than that. So it is a very touchy thing. I do want to tell the board, I thought Chris did a tremendous job with the Department of Justice when we had our meeting for the U.S. government. One assurance that we got from them is they will send an early bird letter if they think that we're starting to violate federal law, and that's a personal concern. And I want to say that one of the problems of the Mendocino program was, one, they labeled it regulating cannabis as opposed to the effects of cannabis, and that's why I really think it's cannabis, water quality, and water supply, or environmental effects. It's not cannabis we're regulating. But that then, they subpoenaed all the records based upon the title of the regulation. I think if we just stick to our guns while we're really doing it, it will be very valuable. One last thing, I think it's minimal paperwork. Take Google, pick out the gardens that you think are 5,000 plants or greater, send them a letter. And despite what the Department of Justice says, there's all kinds of 30,000, even greater plant growths that nothing has happened for 10 years. So they're not going to say we don't enforce so good even on their criteria, but in fact is they don't enforce so good. And so I do think size does matter at some point, and I think it would help the program if everyone who had very large plantations, and they're almost always associated with clearing, and a lot more environmental effects take place in those, is to have a criteria. If under Google, just gun it. If you think it's more than 5,000 plants, I think we ought to generate a letter to them to come into the regulatory permit process. So, and thank you for your work, and it will be touchy-feely how we go on. One last question, though, for you. Funding's important. You got to show deliverables. In one sense, I view Sproul Creek as showing deliverables to get future funding. That's critically important. And do you have a tension between what you need for deliverables to get funding versus a lot more educational, aerial, bail, and then lean kind of program or not? Or do you? Because we have to make sure you get your deliverables for funding. I mean, let's be candid here.
Focus on performance these days is on outcomes. So just to be frank, mailing out flyers is not an outcome. So, and obviously, you know, it's a good idea to do a lot of these things.
Yeah.
So what the governor's office and the legislators are looking for, and remember, there's the legislature votes, they're not all your local legislators.
Yes.
There are many different perspectives on this issue from this, you know, we should be eradicating all this stuff with, you know, guns and artillery. So to, you know, it should be completely legal for any purpose. So the perspectives vary dramatically, but performance measures that the legislature and the governor's office are interested in, adoption of permits. So we told them we would have two regions with permits in place within the first couple of years. That's something that we're on track to get to. And that's great thanks to your staff for taking the charge on that. Inspections undertaken. That's a performance measure. We're going to meet our target this year. Cleanup and abatement orders issued and administrative civil liabilities issued. Those are our performance measures. We have a very modest measure, 5 ACL actions. I'll probably issue those all in Region 5 in the next month. So, but essentially, your perspective of aerial, mail,
lean. And it's not an educational mailer. It's saying you owe this sum of money, or you're not doing this.
You know, is one tool that we need to apply, I think. But in order to guarantee our funding, we will need to show measurable deliverables that
others with a less enlightened perspective maybe may be looking for.
And then I do think the second you get aerial, the number and types of grows would also be a deliverable if you can work that in too. And I certainly want to have us work with you on deliverables, but I think in the long run, the deliverable there is a functional program that's adequately sustained.
Without question, the long run. The question is, how do we get there? Because, you know, really our ask again this year is for funding at the same level. And it truly is a pilot project.
Right.
And so, but whatever happens, we're never going to have enough staff to go to every site. And I completely agree with you on that front, that we need to use the technology available to us to try to streamline and maximize staff efficiency.
Anyway, I think great progress. I just want to keep coming back to what I've seen as functionally worked in marijuana country.
Great. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I think this is really interesting from a social and economic and political standpoint, right? I mean, just from the standpoint that look at how fast the things have changed, right? In the last couple of years, you could definitely see the winds of change, both politically and socially, about where this is going. And I say going because I think you're right, Chris. I think I've talked to enough people, including the politicos up and down the line, that the expectation will be on the ballot in some form in 2016. You could see it in our neighboring states, and you can see it on the national level. But at the same time, I had the opportunity. I came home from a meeting in Eureka a while back. And, you know, I catch those little radio stations on the way home. And I caught two programs on the way home on that trip that were talking about this. One was KMUD because they were at our meeting. The other one was out of Garberville, that there was that kind of local, I catch it for a while and then it kind of fades out. But it was very much talking about the local issue. And this is very much tested and continues to test the local governance, right? Land use, land values, economic base, right? I think last week there was a discussion up in Mendocino County of basically life with legal weed, because a lot of these economies, I think, are very much, you know, kind of running on this now. At the same time, I'll ask you, Chris, from the Office of Enforcement and actually to Department of Fish and Wildlife, I had somebody call me last week. Siskiyou County had an eight-hour meeting in their land use planning last week to try to figure out what to do with this, right? And it's out there, and it's very interesting. Is there any assistance? I would have guessed that some counties see the state coming in and saying what local land use issues decisions should be could be a difficult entry. But at the same time, the land use issue is a big issue here. Do you offer assistance? Is assistance given to local entities, local counties, to try to figure out what to do with this?
It's a super sensitive issue.
I would imagine.
Land use. In Oregon, they nationalized land use and took it away from the locals about 15 years ago. That could never happen in our state. It's really important, again, to work with local officials to give them scientific information and the benefit of our knowledge, but they're going to make policy in those counties. And that's just the way it's going to be in California. So we do provide assistance. I have, you know, the Humboldt County Board of Supervisors has provided me with their draft ordinance and asked for direct feedback on it. So.
I do want to give us background for Humboldt County, and I don't want to sound too cynical, but 30 to 40% of the structures are not permitted in Humboldt County. So you have the world of the planning department, and then you have the world in the rural areas, and there's no connect, and that's – so obviously they should have the opportunity to enforce. I would not count on that as being a leading edge, let me put it that way.
No, it's their thing, right? So for us, I
absolutely
really want to express to them when we go to the counties,
yeah,
we're about water supply and water quality. If there's something that's completely lawful under your regulations, it still might not work for us. And these
right.
are what the things that we're considering about, setbacks, slopes, crossings.
Well, in effect, too, Chris, I think, you know, you've been a big part of this great big discussion, and us as a board, I think, struggled with this initially because we are not legalizing weed. Right? We are regulating the discharge of waste. And actually, Samantha Olson, I give you great credit in giving us some legal basis to that. You know, we're not preempting federal law here. We're regulating the discharge of waste from an activity. And to come back to fairness, which we kind of hit on in enforcement beginning, was is that this is also a fairness and equity issue. You know, Greg mentioned as a forester, you know, we regulate forestry up and down. We regulate a lot of activities up and down. This is the Wild West, right? And in reality, I think that it was stated on this board in previous discussions that it doesn't matter if you're growing artichokes in the middle of, you know, Mendocino National Forest. If you discharge waste in that activity, then you got a problem. And I think that's the way to do it. From the equity standpoint and fairness or regulatory, I think that's an important footing to maintain. I think it's also interesting that it's potentially, if we talk about legalization and that coming about, and it's coming about rather fast, I believe, then what happens with that, right, that the activity is now more maybe overt? I've contemplated myself about, well, why would you want to grow in the middle of nowhere? Wouldn't I want to grow in the Sebastopol, where I live?
Yeah.
Right, go to the Central Valley. That's going to be really interesting. Right? This is going to be really, really interesting. And yet, Duane, you know, you stated that prioritization, going to priority watersheds, and I think from a water quality standpoint, absolutely, you bet. And I think, you know, I heard last week, and you may be able to build the answers, the Fisher being considered, I believe, for listing on ESA.
Correct.
Did that happen?
No, I believe it's still pending.
Okay. Yeah. Because I know that there's also, this isn't just a water quality issue, of course, you know, that this is rodenticides and some nasties out here, really big nasties. Very, very interesting. And this is changing so fast, and we're out kind of on the edge here together. It's an interesting edge to be on. One last question, Diana, for you, is that remind me, what is the timing and schedule of this program coming to us?
We hope to have an informational workshop. Speak into the microphone. Okay. We hope to come back to you with an informational workshop in March, and we hope to bring the proposed draft waiver order, whatever form it is, but right now it's a conditional waiver, for your consideration for adoption in June.
Oh, and I'm sorry, I had one other hint. I don't know, have you contacted the marijuana department of HSU where they do a study of the cultivation of marijuana and trends? And I haven't, but they should be a wealth of knowledge because they have ongoing academic studies and... Great. Good move.
I'm good. Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Okay.
We're going down the line.
Yeah. No. I apologize to you.
Well, I guess the benefit of being down toward the end of the line is most of this has already been discussed already, but there's still one thing that I want to bring up, and I agree with my fellow board members here. Chris, from the presentation, I've distilled out basically three categories of cultivators. We've got trespass federal land grows. We've got private lands with what you've called folks that care, and then we've got private lands with folks that don't care. It's that last category that spooks me, because federal, we're leaving up to federal law enforcement, and there's, you know, been demonstrated effort that's taking place. We've got a program now we're working on this compliance assistance model that's dealing with the folks that are caring, kind of going through the front door. But, you know, we've got, as Chairman Corbett said, we've got some big scale stuff out there. It's not just recreational bulldozing, it's recreational bulldozing on meth. These guys are clearing vast quantities of land. There's illegal diversions in storage. I mean, these are really, really bad apples. And I've seen it on the ground, I've seen it from the air. And there's, I think, at some level, some bit of prioritization needs to happen for these really egregious effects. And I know that, you know, straight up from the, you know, I guess if we're leaving that last category up to the law enforcement approach, where it's not going through this particular program, we can have staff come in and assist on some of these cleanups. But there's still some biggies that are out there. And I think as a priority threat to the resources and the beneficial uses that we're trying to protect, we can't let those go just because, well, they're not trying to comply with the program here, or they're not willing. The guys that want to come in and cut and run, that's a huge problem. So I'm concerned about it, and so I don't know, am I off the mark here of just being concerned and it's just open-ended and we just hope that it gets taken care of?
No, your perception of the situation is really on point, so, and it's things that we're considering. So I've met with the California National Guard, Office of Emergency Services, federal law enforcement. They're going to be ratcheting up their efforts and really focusing on the trespass growers. They know what we're doing. Okay. We know enough about what they're doing to be safe, but it's the coordination that we're working with them is really high level, and they have a lot of resources to apply to this, to the law enforcement model. With respect to those that are the bad actor group, 2 points. One is we need to apply our general deterrence model and focus in high-value watersheds first. Can't lose our fisheries first. And then the second point is, as we get out in the field, we notice that the more we can daylight the good actors, the more we find out who the bad actors are and that there is a possibility for self-policing in neighborhoods. So right now, the good actors can't come forward, can't work to weed out these bad actors for fear of prosecution, eradication, loss of their lifestyle. If there's a pathway for compliance to them, daylighting those activities, and I don't mean to say legitimizing them, but there's a sense to that where if they feel legitimate, they'll also self-police. And so it's not tried and true in a sense, but I'll give an example. In the metal recycling business, we had all the big permittees come to us with a list of 50 metal recyclers who were egregious actors. And we did an enforcement initiative with DTSC, mostly there in Southern California. And basically, this group of industry people that spend a lot of money on compliance ratted out all the people that didn't. And I don't think we'll get to that extreme, but if we can move the needle in that direction, it'll be beneficial.
Great. Thanks. Dwayne, thank you very much. Much appreciated. And I know this is something that, you know, it's been kicked around early on at the regional water board level. I know the state DFW really helped pick up the ball with some of the work that Scott Bauer did to bring it to statewide attention. And the fact that we have now that it's elevated itself up the food chain to, you know, the highest level of our state government, and we've got this effort happening. I'm pleased to see that. So thanks, everybody.
I'll just briefly add to the comments that everyone else has made. It's incredibly impressive to see the, you know, the level of agency coordination, and certainly seems necessary to address a problem of this scale. But of course, including multiple agencies on any issue also includes a breadth of public resources being spent. And I just want to applaud the level of strategy and focus that you have described in this program, because I think that's so important with limited public resources and a limited amount of time, really, that you've been able to take this very large issue and hone in on how you can demonstrate measurable outcomes, not just outputs, with limited budget and limited time. So thank you for that.
Mr. Chair, the fact that we ask pointed questions and, are you working with the big part or the little part? I don't think that should be construed in any way. We love you guys, okay? It's something, it's way, too, way better. It is way, way better than where we have been before. To the extent that we make pointed questions, it's probably just the frustration, which I'm sure you share with all of us, that this is, again, it's a problem which we didn't have 30 years ago, and we don't have the regulatory system lined up to do that. But this is coming to us. So, yeah, we really do like you guys doing this. It's the pointed questions are, how do we improve it? Thank you very much.
I just want to.
On a final note, the reason that we started with Sprawl Creek, because it dried up, because it was a significant resource. No, I understand, but I just want to understand the strategy with which I went with this. I have 35 people that I'm responsible for, and I wanted a watershed that was high value, and I wanted my team to learn to function together efficiently and effectively. And trust me, those larger growths will be dealt with very shortly.
Can we check if there's anybody from the public that wanted to address the board on this item? Any speakers?